Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel once more. I'm commenting just after the 79th anniversary of the death of Subhas Chandra Bose, known to many in India as Netaji, as in dear leader, or would respected leader be a better interpretation. So Mr. Bose, he died in Taiwan. So he's best known for having founded the Azad Hind Fauj, as in the Free India Army. To fight against the British Raj. So he's born in 1897 in, I think it's now Orissa. I'm not sure if Oriya was his first language. His father was a well-to-do barrister. So Subhas Chandra Bose, he was one of about a dozen children. And a couple of his brothers achieved some distinction, were prominent figures set in West Bengal well after Subhas Chandra Bose died. So his academic precocity was notable from very early stage. He attended a university in India. Then he went to the University of Cambridge for a one-year course. You know, we've got to remember, when he was born, literacy was very low in India. It was only about 20%. So he was upper middle class, and he had an absolute master of the English language. I'm not sure if he had to pass exams in even Latin and ancient Greek to get into Cambridge. But then the glittering path beckoned. He could have joined the Indian civil service and could have had a very comfortable lifestyle. But he eschewed all that because he was at Cambridge just after the First World War. And he was convinced that the Britannic Raj was something that was baleful for India. And so he's going to use his education in order to bring about Indian independence. So he was a man of sort of totalitarian convictions. There are no photos of him smiling. Now, he grew up at a time when, certainly in the white world, people were often reflexively white supremacist. Not that they necessarily detested non-white people or so on, but, you know, certainly in India, it was almost unheard of to have a non-white person in command of a white. And he wrote how refreshing it was to have a white man polishing his shoes in the United Kingdom, partly because over 99% of the population was white at the time. So then he returned to India. He threw himself into the activities of the Indian National Congress, which was becoming more oppositional. The much hoped for significant reform of the governance of India right after the First World War had not materialized. Of course, it's just after Jallianwala Bagh, that massacre in Amritsar in April 1919 during a Sikh festival. Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, he was the doyen of the non-cooperation movement. So Gandhi, he eschewed the use of force, despite the fact that he had urged Indians to volunteer for the Indian Army and the Royal Indian Navy, i.e. the pro-British armed forces in the First World War. And M.K. Gandhi believed that there would be significant improvement in the governance of India in return for this loyal and sterling service in what the British termed the Great War for Civilization. So Bose had his own newspaper, Swaraj, as in self-rule or possibly independence. He was involved in the Congress Party in Bengal. He didn't necessarily want, Congress didn't want a republic at that stage. They wanted dominion status, the same status that Australia or Canada or New Zealand or Newfoundland had at the time, Newfoundland not being part of Canada to 1949, or indeed South Africa. And they say, well, all those other countries, they have it because there are lots of whites there. In South Africa, the white community was a minority of the population, but black people were largely deprived of political rights at the time. And they said, you're not giving it to us because we're not white, and that is racist. We are capable of self-government. But the British Raj, though it had, there were some reforms, these were said to be largely cosmetic and as slow as possible. So Bose, he gradually grew impatient with this moderation, and he was minded towards militancy. He was brought from a Hindu family. He emphasized that there had to be fraternity and collaboration between Muslims, Hindus, and those of other faiths. So he was willing to break the law. He spent short stints in prison. He was General Secretary of the Congress Party, but he began to have a bit of a clash with Jawaharlal Nehru. So Nehru was viewed by the British as something of a gentleman, partly because of his elite British education. He'd been at Cambridge not for a year, for the whole 3 years, called to the bar, as well as Harrow School before that. So Bose had people wear quasi-military uniforms and so on, so as though preparing to fight. So he courted arrest for civil disobedience, but it didn't do his popularity any harm, and he was elected mayor of Calcutta in 1930. And in Calcutta, there was a plaque on a building where the so-called Black Hole of Calcutta incident had taken place in the 18th century, exaggerated by imperialist propagandists, about some British civilians locked up in a small room, and some of them died due to heat stroke, one very hot night, and a lack of airflow. But it seems to be just negligence on the part of their Bengali jailers, not deliberate cruelty. But anyway, this was blown out of all proportion to suggest that Indian people were inherently bad, and therefore they'd required the benevolence of Britannic mastery for their own betterment. So he said, this is a standing insult to all Indians, and it shall be removed. And lo, it was. Because, you know, if you go back to the 19th century, every British child could tell you about that incident. So he traveled in Europe, and he found that the Prime Minister of Italy, the fascist Benito Mussolini, was deeply sympathetic. I mean, Mussolini was very imperialist, but he just didn't like rival imperialism. So he saw Britain as a possible enemy. And so that's when Bose published his book. So Bose is a man of totalitarian tendencies. Now, some people say, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. He went to Germany when it was under Nazi rule. Indeed, he married an Austrian lady. Remember, Austria became part of Germany in 1938, so it remained till 1945, and he had a daughter with that Austrian woman, who's still alive, I believe. So he was under house arrest in the Second World War, and he managed to escape in the dead of night. He assumed the false identity of an Italian, because some Italians are quite swarthy, so a fairly light-skinned Indian and a fairly dark-skinned white person could easily pass for each other. There's no obvious dividing line between what's really white, what's really brown. So with this false passport, he got into Afghanistan through the Soviet Union, which was then at peace with Germany, and all the way to Germany. And of course, the Nazi Germany government welcomed him. Some Indian soldiers fighting in the pro-British Indian army had been captured by the Germans, and some were turned into the first units of the Azad Hind Fauj. Thought he'd fight against the Britishers there. Remember, the Congress Party leaders, they were all flung in jail for disobedience in the Second World War. The Muslim League did not have that happen, because the Muslim League, though it did not urge men to rally to the British colours, neither did it discourage such activities. It proclaimed itself neutral in the Second World War. Bose was sent by German submarine to Japan, and obviously when Singapore surrendered the Japanese in early 1942, Bose marched in. There were tens of thousands of Indian prisoners of war. They were offered the chance to join his Azad Hind Fauj or be put to death. And some of them, nobly laid down their lives for the British Empire, for what they thought was the good of India, for their honour, because they were men of their word. They'd taken an oath to the King Emperor. But anyway, soon the Indian troops, they had to salute the Japanese officers. Japanese did not have to salute Indian officers, and so on. And some of the Indian soldiers saw the incredible cruelty and brutality of Japanese rule, which made British rule seem not as bad by comparison. Another thing is, obviously, Japan had invaded China and other countries, and so would do the same to India. But Bose said, well, no, they won't. But if it comes to it, I suppose we can fight them. They got into what's Myanmar. A tiny bit into the very east of India, took the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. He proclaimed himself the provisional president of India, or free India, as he called it, would broadcast to India, but in which language? So broadcast in English, partly because it was spoken all over India, but it only admired a small elite, as little as 5% of the population. Of course, in those days, very few people could afford a radio. But he thought, well, which language should we use? Because there are hundreds of them. They use Urdu a lot, partly because that being the language of the last major state to rule an independent India, the Mughal Empire. But it wasn't to be, and they pushed back into Myanmar. And if towards the end of the war it was all collapsing, he fled to Taiwan, the Chinese island, hoping to go to the Soviet Union, saying, well, they're still bitter rivals of the United Kingdom and others, and they've always said that the dissolution of the British Empire is one of their goals. He did agree with the British Raj on one thing, that democracy was inapposite for India, but he was denounced by a fascist, by Nehru and others. So anyway, his reputation's undergone something of a rehabilitation since his death. His plane may take him off towards the Soviet Union. It crashed almost as soon as it took off from Formosa, it was then known. He was cremated. His ashes are still there, but a lot of people pay tribute to him to these days. He was very racist, very anti-Semitic. He gave these stirring speeches. Well, the content was verbal adrenaline, but the delivery was very poor, totally uninspiring, because you think his slogan, "Give me blood and I will give you freedom," that could be delivered with a sonorous flourish, but he was no rhetor. So he's a very bland, reserved, desiccated sort of man. And I know he's honored by statutory tributes all over India these days. I say evil man. I'm very glad that when independence came, a decent, humane party like Congress took over and not him. But I think Indian politicians of almost all hues find it electorally advantageous to doff the cap to Subhas Chandra Bose. Anyway, should his ashes be returned to India and no doubt interred with the greatest of honor, I think definitely not. Obviously, it's not my decision. I'm the last imperialist. What do you think? Thanks for watching my video, and make sure you subscribe to my channel, George Callahan 79@gmail.com, for donations on PayPal. Goodbye.